There's an area where there's where you I think you jump over a pit, and then there's the key, and you have to get the key past like a certain area. Yeah, you're right, I can't do this. So
roll for host.
Generate
rolling for host people. Let's
generate
do it.
Random number
1 to 20.
15. Bullshit.
11.
15.
Is this the third week in a row?
Yes.
Is that 3 weeks of terrible hosting?
Pretty much.
All right. Welcome to the Escort Mission Podcast.
Woo.
We're a little bit delayed this week, and so we might do a little shortened episode.
Minisode.
Minisode.
I guess it's kind of up to you, host.
Oh, I was kind of thinking of making it 6 hours long.
Okay.
So I'm in charge, so that's what we're going to do.
Awesome.
All prepare. Right. Prepare yourselves.
I'm going to go pee.
Hold your balls, people.
Grab them, feel them, check them for cancer.
No cancer? All right, cool. Let's move on.
Cancer free.
Charles, how was your week?
My week was good. My week was good, generally speaking. It was Mother's Day, which is one of the reasons, one of the parts of life
I like
that
mom.
Happened.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good
yes.
going, moms.
We all love
good
moms.
Job.
Good job, moms.
Thank you for us.
Yeah.
Thanks,
so
mom.
Interesting things that happened this week outside of games. One kind of pretty big thing. President Obama came out in favor of gay marriage.
What?
We have a gay president. Yep.
Our in first gay president. Yeah. That
pretty
was
cool.
The, Newsweek headline. I thought it was, I was happy that this happened, but
you
I...
You thought you were happy?
Well, when it comes to politics, I always default to, like, the most nefarious possible.
Oh, no.
Oh,
you
election
got really
year.
Cynical about it.
Yeah,
you think
I
you
get
just did
so
it for
cynical
political
about
reasons.
It. Well, I know he did it for or political because... reasons, right? He doesn't do... Nobody in national office does anything not for political reasons, or at least without political...
No, even that statement was way overly cynical.
This is my sense about politics.
Politicians like, are bad, Josh.
I don't think politicians are bad necessarily, but I think that...
They're self-serving.
For example, I think that this was his opinion all along. I think he
yeah,
said,
totally.
Like, my views on this subject have evolved. I think that he just said the civil unions thing to get elected.
Yeah, no, I think
with.
He was quoted like 15 years ago saying something about supporting gay marriage, and then... You know, he reversed that into, I'm not so sure, while he ran for office for many years.
Yeah, there was a cool chart online that actually showed him and Romney and where they stood, like, 20 years ago, and then how they subtly shift over the years to...
Yeah.
Yep. Two-party system, folks.
Yep.
Play
it works.
The...
Woo!
And so there's that, and then there's also just the fact that I think it's still basically a prevarication on his part. Like, I'm happy that he said it. I'm happy that a U.S. president, was able to say that, but he... still essentially said, like, this is my personal view, but I think it should be decided on a state-by-state basis. So it's like, I'm sure he wouldn't feel that way about, you know, the Jim Crow laws or slavery or something, right? Like, if something's a human right, then it is, and what are we doing?
Yeah, baby but, steps, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep, yeah, baby steps.
So, anyway, that was good.
That was a good movie.
Generally
I like
speaking.
That movie.
Baby steps.
What about Bob? That was a pretty good movie.
Oh, yeah.
What Bill Murray?
Bill Murray rules.
And what's his face? You know, he's the psych patient that follows...
That wasn't Billy Crystal. What
no.
was that guy's name?
Richard Dreyfuss.
There you go.
Yeah. Good movie. You should go see it,
you
everybody.
Should, you should gay marry Richard Dreyfuss.
We'll put a link to that somewhere on the internet.
Amazon, buy it. Click through our link.
No, I noticed.
What about Bob?
I'm putting that in the show notes.
Yeah, Chaz. I was going to bring up the idea that you should put specific links to the things we talk about to Amazon via our link, and then you already did it. So, you're on that ball.
I'm doing that. We
that
get
ball
more,
is happening.
Oh, Amazon, you bad hosting. You forgot to mention Amazon. People.
Amazon, I just did it.
Well,
I mentioned it
in the course of the show. You're supposed to mention it at the top.
Come on, host.
I slipped it in within 5 minutes. That's pretty good, right?
Yeah, it's natural. It came up in conversation. click through our Amazon link. Support the show. Cars. I'm starting to see the Fisker Karma out there on the road, which is the...
Is that a James Bond villain or something?
It sounds like it, yeah.
I don't know what that is.
And now,
sounds Mr. like Karma, a Reddit username.
Fister Karma. Yeah, it does.
Fister. Fisker.
Fisker. Karma? Karma.
Is that a vacuum?
Yes. It's a
we're
it's
such
a,
car
it's
guys.
It's like a $120,000 vacuum. No, this is
made
it's
by
a
Dyson.
Series hybrid, just super exotic looking. Like looks like a supercar. Actually, is a electric series hybrid. I've seen a couple of them on the road. I saw a white one today.
Cool.
It's pretty sweet. Yeah. And then I saw outside my work, just parked on the street, a black on chrome, like I don't know. I don't know the year off the top of my head, a Yanko Corvette Stingray, just Ooh. Like black on chrome convertible baseball stitch, brown leather seats. Just like the best. This is the car that made me love cars.
Where was that? Downtown?
Little kid. Yeah. Downtown.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, I melted into a puddle. That car is so good looking.
Look out, Jess.
Yeah.
You got competition.
Totally. Jess is my girlfriend. I mean, wife.
Oh,
I mean, not wife.
Ooh,
she's whatever.
Not sure now. Status unknown.
Yes.
Also a mom to be appreciated.
Yes. Go Jess.
Woo. She got. Well, we both got a big box of chocolate covered strawberries. Ooh. So she got that, but I also sort of got that, which is how those presents should definitely work.
Nice.
Games. I borrowed. Oh wait! Before games, we all went and saw the Avengers.
We did Yay. Together.
How have you?
We teamed up.
Yeah, we did
to go see the Avengers.
Generally speaking, I think that it was pretty good, but I know a ton of people who are like, "It's the greatest movie that they've ever seen, best comic book movie, like best everything." And
really?
I don't agree at all.
I've been hearing that opinion.
Few people at my work, and then general box office results.
Who are these people?
A couple people from my work also said they really liked it.
A couple people with generally bad taste in movies.
the one part I thought, I mean, Robert Downey Jr. was good. He had good lines. The one little bit with the Hulk was super hilarious. But the part that I thought they got the best was the Hulk. Just that no other movie has really captured how when he's the Hulk, he's like totally out of control. Just ball of rage, doesn't care who or what he harms, kills, hurts, etc.
If he goes into Hulk mode out of his own control.
Because
he does kind of do it in a more controlled way.
Yes, but that was, I think, the best treatment of Hulk that I've seen in a movie yet. But
it
seem to be the most realistic, mm-hmm. What you would think would happen to someone who did that.
But overall, that movie was just like a big action spectacular, and exactly what we expected, and good.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah.
But not like the best thing.
To some extent, it felt like a slightly better Transformers to me.
Yeah.
You know, like
it definitely felt like that.
Like it's a big action movie for the sake of being a big action movie. It also happened to have like three or four kind of funny lines and a couple of good actors that were pretty relatable, you know. Pretty relatable and had kind of good characters.
Mm-hmm.
But that's as far as I'll basically go. Other than that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't.
It was eh.
I don't think I saw any of the single superhero movies that, you know, like I didn't see Thor and I didn't see Iron Man. I didn't see Captain America. I didn't see Incredible Hulk. So seeing the movie for me felt sort of like watching a preview after a preview after a preview of that movie, like 5 minutes of that movie, like, oh, remember this guy and his movie? And this was, the movie was sort of like that. Now we're going to show you what that was like in this movie.
Yeah.
And then we'll show them all together. And yeah, I thought it was good. I'm not a superhero movie fan, so I wasn't hyped about it, but yeah, it was worth the money. The one thing that was not worth it though was the 3D. That was not worth the $2 extra that we paid because I took my 3D glasses off about 30 minutes towards the end because my face was actually hurting because I was wearing them over glasses.
Face was hurting.
And just having glasses on glasses was uncomfortable.
So good. This movie made my face hurt.
That movie made my ears hurt. That theater was
so freaking loud.
Yeah, it's an action movie, you know.
I don't know. But it was an IMAX theater like, tuned to like IMAX ear piercingness.
Yeah.
So yes,
Avengers.
Diablo is blowing up the internet.
Well, those who can log in during that time when they could not.
That's that's my point. Like, almost nobody could log in.
Jimmy actually made a great Facebook status update where he says, Jimmy Quadra is now in a relationship with Error 37.
Nice. There's error37.com, error37 on Twitter, like at error37.
Of course there's error37.com. I don't know why I didn't immediately try that.
Yeah, that I only bring it up because it seems totally shitty that you would buy what is, for all intents and purposes, a single-player game.
It isn't.
With multiplayer
component. An MMO. It's almost like an MMO.
I believe someone said it was an MMO with selective instancing, is how they said. Like, yeah, it's not meant to be a single-player. As much as you might think it is,
bullshit.
But I don't think it was
because
meant to be
people bought
that
game who played Diablos 1 and 2, and this is Diablo 3, like... You could definitely have bought that game and be sitting there playing your single-player game and be experiencing lag. Like, what the fuck is that? Like, right. My single-player game is lagging?
Yeah.
That's BS.
And I think those people are misled. I don't think they paid attention to any of the pre-release news or anything if they went into the game thinking, like, what? I have to log in?
Well,
what
is this? You can play multiplayer up to, what, like four-man multiplayer, right?
Yeah.
That's no MMO.
Well, I know, but I mean everything that...
Minimally multiplayer.
What
online.
I mean is everything Blizzard is ever going to do from now on is going to be basically server-based and function like an MMO.
Yeah.
And the game is heavily designed around, you know, monetizing the auction house and the co-op. And it's almost like the single player is an afterthought. And it's like, oh yeah, if you want to, you can play this alone... And mostly disconnected,
but it
doesn't have a fully offline optional mode, which blew up like 2 years ago. They announced that or something.
Oh, I know that they announced it, and I know that it's been the case for that long. But I think that it just sucks on their part because nobody should know how to run such an infrastructure better than Google or Blizzard, right? Nobody should be any better at it than Google. than Blizzard.
I guess Google should get into
should
the game
be
business.
Good too. Yeah. And I'm convinced that they, maybe this is cynical again, but like, I'm guessing they just don't want to buy enough server infrastructure to support the day one spike. So they just give you Error 37, right?
I think that one was probably actually a mistake. They could have prepped. They obviously could have thrown an error that didn't say error 37, but said we're experiencing a high volume of logins.
I mean, it said error 37,
and you're in a queue, and then have you sit in a queue?
Yeah,
that I think it was a mistake. I mean,
that's what happened after, like, by midday they instituted the server queue, right?
Yeah, but I mean, they could have had that from minute one.
They definitely should have. But
right.
I feel like they also could have predicted, because they know exactly how many people have downloaded the game. Like, they have all that data. They know how many servers they're going to need to... They definitely ought to have known how many servers they were going to need to within a much closer, you know, margin of error than... Like,
I don't know.
The game's offline for 4 hours, guys.
I don't think it's
like...
I don't think it's a big deal. I think, you know, it's like, it's inevitable that mistakes happen and that, you know, there will be periodic downtime. These are not super critical, you know, infrastructure, you know, nationwide, like,
right.
It's not, I don't know, water treatment plants or something. Yeah. We're talking about games. And
there are people who, like, took the day off work, though. I mean,
yeah,
that kind of sucks.
That does suck.
But they should know by now that... Day one stuff is unstable, and they probably should not have done that. That was risky. By now, you should know that.
Yeah,
it's sort of like you're saying.
But what's the penalty?
Blizzard should be ready.
What's the penalty? They're not going to do that much lower sales because.
Well, yeah,
because
it's Blizzard. Like, but non Blizzard, if this happened to them, they'd probably like go out of business over this. Like,
no, every MMO launches with troubles like this. It's like par for the course. It's like 80 to 90% or more of them. If an MMO launches smoothly, it's with no bugs like that for even a couple hours, it's almost unheard of, you know, like Terra's launch 2 weeks ago was really, really smooth. And it was only because like they just launched virtually the identical game in Korea. But I don't mean just, they did it a year ago. So, you know, they had the experience and practice and stuff. And one could argue that Blizzard should have the experience and practice and stuff, except Blizzard is a big company and they have different teams. And this wasn't necessarily, you know, involving the exact same people.
Nobody's got WoW, more expertise.
And they didn't. They're different teams. The Diablo people didn't necessarily have the expertise. If you look at Blizzard's websites and stuff, mm-hmm. and all their different games, like they are kind of all independently managed.
But Battle.net is a centralized infrastructure.
But not to some extent. But it's not like Origin or Steam or something. It's not like Battle.net is a different website from Blizzard.com, which is a different website from Diablo3.com, which
is
a
website
different. It's kind of representative to me of maybe how they run things behind the scenes too. Like they might have all these different teams split up and not working together as much as maybe they should.
Uh-huh.
You know what I
mean? Yeah. I mean,
it's been years and years and years since they actually launched WoW. You know, yeah, but they don't launch things very often.
Yeah, they just launched. I mean, they launched StarCraft a couple years ago. Like, I feel like running. I mean, maybe, you know, a steady state, you know, maintenance of a game is different than, you know, running or launching a new game. But I feel like they should have a better handle on it now. And I kind of get the sense that they, like, you know, I just feel like they just, there's a number of servers they could have had in place that would have supported all those people. And they would only have needed it for day one, and then they would have needed like a third of that amount, and some, you know, accountant said like, there's no way we're going to authorize that expense.
I think what happens a lot to these, because this is a real, real similar problem other games have had in the past, is that you know, they have all these like game servers ready and redundant, and you know, they can throw up more, they can purchase more
elastic,
you know,
whatever. Yeah,
but they often have it like a single point of failure for the authentication server.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one where you log in at the beginning, it's every authentication worldwide might still go through basically one box before you actually get
or
to
like
all these
three different regions or something.
Instance or region.
It's like having one Active Directory domain.
Yeah,
like,
and off. So if there's one little issue with that thing, then that's when they have to schedule downtime.
Yeah.
Unless they have super redundancy everywhere.
I mean, I can't imagine that stuff's not like highly available and clustered and whatever, but
yeah, they should,
I think they
ideally.
Have far fewer authentication servers than they do game servers. You're definitely right about that.
Once again, they will they'll make themselves feel better by jumping in their, you know, money bins.
Yes.
Because of all the cash they're making. They'll,
oh my God.
They'll feel better.
Everyone's buying Diablo 3, even people that don't usually play games. Jimmy hasn't played a game in years.
Right. I know. And he sent an email saying, all right, let's play Diablo 3.
Let's all play Diablo.
Well, whatever.
I borrowed Josh's PS3 this week, and that has games on it. And
it has games in which you can insert.
I played a couple twin stick shooters.
And conveniently, this week, I wanted to play three PS3 games.
Did you really?
Bad call. Bad call, sir.
You were going to be playing Terra for like nonstop.
I know. I am.
Yeah,
but
get over
I just
it.
Mean, in theory, there are like three things I want to try on there.
What are they? Out of curiosity.
One of them is Closure, which is like a puzzle game that came out a month ago or something that I just somehow missed. When we were into Fez and Braid, I found it last week. And I was like, oh, I should try that. And one of them just came out maybe a few days ago or a week ago or two called Datura. Another weird downloadable.
Yeah.
I want to look into it. And then because I was playing Terra, I really wanted to compare it directly to God of War 3.
Huh.
So I wanted to try God of War 3.
Okay. Well, I have your...
Anyway, continue.
Yeah.
So I'm teasing.
You can do that. I played Everyday Shooter, which is interesting. It's kind of a slower paced and sort of musically interesting twin stick shooter that I liked but didn't love. And I played Super Stardust HD, which might be my new favorite game.
Really?
That game is so good.
If you like it that much, then you're totally going to buy a Vita, like, imminently.
No.
Because the sequel, basically, or the better version of it, just came out on Vita recently.
I can't, like, I mean... That and Lumines, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah. Just give it some time.
As I was discussing with Mike over IM the other day, like...
Yeah, it's either that or pay down the mortgage.
Or pay down my mortgage, yeah, at this point in life. But Everyday Shooter is so good, and I am
generally... Super Stardust.
Or rather, yeah, Super Stardust HD.
Hood.
So was there a Super Stardust on PSP, and then HD was on PS3?
I thought Super Stardust was like an old game. That sounds really familiar, like a TurboGrafx-16, like, shooter or
something. I don't know the history.
I don't know.
No research.
Research is bad.
You're right.
But, yeah, I assume PC because they call it HD, probably. There was probably some super old game they're basing it on.
Sounds like that. So what they do is, you know, I am generally a fan of, you know, simple over complex in terms of design. So you would think that I would prefer Geometry Wars, and I do really like Geometry Wars, but the graphics are just so pretty on Super Stardust. And what they did is, you know, total genius, twin stick shooter, but the playing field is a spherical planet rather than a flat plane. And that just changes it so much. It's very different than having a, you know, a flat plane that wraps around from side to side. You know, just the, because you're basically always in the middle of the screen. You have such great awareness of everything that's of all potential threats. Like, I don't know, something about it, you just flow and zone out. Just like the best of all those games. But yeah, the music, I think, is better than Geometry Wars. The graphics are better. It has, you know, multiple weapons, and you know, switch between three different weapons depending on the threats that you're facing. And it's just really, really good.
Yeah, it's like asteroids on the surface of a small moon.
Yeah.
And because the camera is always hovering directly above you, when you move, the whole moon turns instead of actually you moving.
Yeah.
To some extent.
Yeah.
I played a little bit and I was impressed by how it looks and such, and it plays okay, but I guess I never got to the point where the challenge ramped up.
You never even beat the first planet. Like, I'm unlocking stuff in your game.
I never really touched it on PS3 at all, but I mean, okay. on the Vita, uh-huh. I played a few levels and the difficulty never really ramped up.
Mm-hmm.
At least in the half an hour or so, or 45 minutes that I played it.
Did you beat, like, the boss of that planet?
No, there's a boss?
Oh, yeah.
There were, like, a bunch of waves or something.
Yeah, there are waves. And I just went, like,
okay,
a
here's a bunch of waves.
Yeah.
I didn't know what happens next. I should have
given it more of a
thorough chance.
I've only gotten to the boss of the second planet. I haven't beaten him yet. But, yeah. No, it's good. I really, really like it. I think
so there's bosses.
Yeah.
Shooters have bosses, I think. Favorite. That's a thing.
Definitely my favorite twin stick
shooter. Well, Geometry Wars doesn't have bosses. It's just like infinity mode.
Yeah.
That's true.
Typically. And so I thought this was just like an infinity mode shooter with a bunch of waves.
I guess because when I think of that, if it is a sequel to a game that I'm remembering, that was more of a standard level-based boss thing. So apparently this is something different.
Yeah.
It's all about the scaling, the ramping up of the difficulty. And I guess I was just expecting a sharper curve like Geometry Wars, where like 3 minutes in, it's crazy hard.
Yeah.
And you're fighting for survival.
Yeah, it isn't like that. Yeah. It isn't like that. And you can survive just different a long pacing. Time. Yeah, yeah. The pacing is different. But I really like it. And so I also have been playing, kind of the reason that I borrowed it was to play Ico and Shadow of the Colossus. So I am 4 hours and 50 minutes into Ico based on my save, my most recent save game. And I am up to or just past a big giant waterfall. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Are you talking about Ico?
I'm just sort of giving you an idea.
Yeah, yes, Ico.
Yeah, the waterfall thing that's kind of going down rocks sideways?
No, it's going straight down. So I've opened up, or I haven't opened, I've like activated the first of the two major big doors.
Oh, okay.
And then I'm like maybe another, you know, 40 minutes past that, there's a big waterfall in the middle of a room. It's like going straight down.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I like that one.
Okay. Yeah. So, geez, that game is interesting. I think that game is old. That game, it's a PS2 game, right? Or PS1?
It is almost a launch PS2 game. Okay. It was like first year PS2.
Very early, yeah.
And so at the time, for when you first popped it in at the time, which is what I did. I might have played it 6 months after it came out or something. Mm-hmm. I just found it on a local game exchange, you know, locally owned like rental and shop, and I purchased it
before those disappeared, like entirely.
Yeah, before those disappeared, yeah. Mostly. And I was like, "What the hell is this? Why does this kid have a helmet with horns on it?" And I looked up reviews, I think, before I bought it. The internet must have been around. It was so long ago. I had to think about, was the internet available? I kind of got it on a whim because a review referenced Prince of Persia or something. Hmm. And Prince of Persia was an old classic favorite of mine, the 2D. Mm-hmm. Running and jumping.
Yes.
And in this game,
I don't see that connection at all, but go ahead.
Well, in this game, the it's like it's 3D, and when the little kid runs around in that very first room, it was the first 3D action adventure game where the person running around felt really, really good to me. Mm-hmm. For other folks that was Zelda. But I thought Zelda had shitty control on the N64, and this was really close to around that time. Mm-hmm. And the way that it's similar to the original Prince of Persia is like your jump height. Mm-hmm. Like you can only jump literally like a real person, like 8 inches off the ground or something.
Yeah.
And you have to grab with your fingertips, yeah, edges of ledges and, yeah, climb up them. And that was not as commonly done as today as it was, you know, when that came out more, mm-hmm, than 10 years ago. And so the way that kid ran around and climbed on ledges and stuff was really, really brilliant for its time. And I think it holds up pretty well.
I definitely think it holds up. And as far as an evocative locale and, you know, sort of an engaging but sparse, you know, kind of like the anti-Mass Effect, right? It does not smash you over the head with story at all. I think it's really good, and those are absolutely its strong points. The art direction is really good, even though graphically, obviously, it doesn't hold up at this point. You know, games look a lot better. And I'm playing the kind of remastered 1080p version on the PS3, but it's still, you can tell the textures are from, you know, previous generation. But it's funny because 10 years on from the point when you played it, the controls are my least favorite thing about it. Actually, for a podcast that's called The Escort Mission, that game is one giant escort mission.
Honestly, when you guys suggested the name of the podcast, I was so all over it because I was specifically thinking about Eco and how it's one of my favorite games of all time.
Yeah,
I can't believe it took us 6 episodes to basically bring up the name of our show as an actual game mechanic. Like we haven't like mentioned escort missions at all,
yeah,
until now. Anyway,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, so, and this is like the best example of an escort mission ever.
Except the whole game, I think Charles is going to argue that maybe
no. I mean,
no, it's really well done,
and that part is really good. Actually, the hand holding mechanic is really great. I think that's a very, very good mechanic,
And it's still never been topped. Like, no one has done a better escort than that.
Yeah.
Even people have taken tips from it and tried to emulate it a bit, but nobody's had, like, a hand-holding mechanic like that.
And the kind of interaction between the two of them just kinetically, just the kind of, you know, you start running and the jerking and all that, the kind of interplay between them physically feels really good.
Yeah.
But the...
Man, I love jumping across a wide gap. That, you know, you just run and jump and land. And then she kind of, you know, delicately, you know,
hesitantly gets up to the edge
and, walks up to the edge and goes, "Oh, I don't know about this." And you stick your hand out and you hold the button and you stand at the edge and you lean over the edge of the cliff. That's like a drop to the death, you know. And she, you know, jumps across without doing a running head start. She just kind of jumps from in place and just barely catches your hand, and you lift her up every time.
Man, annoyingly, when you do that, you have to press up on the control stick to pull her up, right? If you just stay there holding the button, button, if you press X, which in all other cases causes you to climb up to the top of the ledge, you don't go up. You have to put this control input on. However, if you are hanging from a ledge just by yourself without holding her, and you press up, you will not climb to the top of the ledge. You have to press the button. So it's like it's got that kind of like controller jank that I think would have been smoothed out at this point in, like, I don't think a modern game would have controlled that way. Another thing, the handhold, the button to grab the girl Yorda's hand and pull her around is different from the button to grab a box and pull it around, right? Like, that's a different button for no reason, even though it's basically the same thing, you know? That's kind of weird. It doesn't really harm the game, per se, but it's just, like, something where if that game were being developed today, I think they would have made different choices around that.
So I understand your point, but the way they do it is sensical. you know, when you are holding her, the reason that's different from when you're climbing up is really a matter of perspective, because you're in control of the boy. You're not in control of everything on the screen.
Yeah.
And so the up motion with the stick is for him to lift her, mm-hmm. to pull on her. Mm-hmm. And when you're climbing up a wall, you know, with the boy, you know, the X button means climb.
The X button means jump. Yeah.
Or jump, which means make the boy go up.
Yeah.
Which doesn't
but
mean...
But why,
like,
doesn't...
Because he's not, you know, holding her below him, pulling her up to him.
Yeah.
Which seems would arbitrary. Be the up. Well, the standards for climbing up edges, you know, settled 5 years ago, mm-hmm. or something. You
yeah,
know?
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying it's different. It's a little bit
it's
weird.
Just a little different.
I think they have...
You can get over that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. You are restating what
get
I
over
stated.
It, Charles. God. Complain.
I think that I get hung up on geometry a lot. That's another thing, is it's one of those early 3D games where, like, if there's a little thing sticking out, there is no code inbuilt that lets you kind of slide around that or move past it, right?
Oh, man, like Uncharted, you know, complete
or,
opposite,
you know,
right?
Gears of War, right? If you're walking past, or Mass Effect, right? If you're walking past the edge of a desk, you don't go chunk, walk around, turn, and then keep going, right? You will just kind of, like, glide, push past that. Right, that is a definite
improvement. Some games do that still to this day.
Yeah, and but, those games suck ass.
Yeah.
You know?
Today we consider that a polish issue.
Yeah,
yeah.
But. Yeah. So that's something, and basically these are just, you know, the game is old. The game came out a long time ago, 10 or 12 years ago or something like that, and they hadn't built past, you know, those types of issues. I also find the combat... I kind of find the combat frustrating. Like, it's the character design is really great. The enemies are cool and, you know, menacing, and I like them, but they are just sort of annoying to fight, and the fights go on for a really long time. The pacing of the fights is not great. But basically all that aside, you know, you can see why this game is just considered seminal. And I think there is a ton to really like about it. And I, none of the stuff that I find frustrating about it, do I find enough frustrating to make me want to stop. Like, I'm still eager to go play and finish it and see what there is. So, and I'm also very interested to see what Shadow of the Colossus is like.
It's like 5 years later.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Where they got to from there. So yeah, these two games have been on my, you know, pile of shame for a long time, and I'm excited to get to
list.
Play them finally.
And they've been on my best games ever list for
a while
since they came out.
Yeah.
And Jesus Christ, Last Guardian couldn't come out any sooner, and it's not coming out
right.
any fucking later.
No. Let's hope it doesn't Duke Nukem itself or something like that.
No, it'll come out. It'll be good
it
when
looks
it comes out.
Close to done, and it looks like it's going to be good. It's just taking
it's be
forever.
Next year, yeah. At best, probably.
All right, Mike.
Were you done, Charles?
I was done.
You're done? All right. So I wanted to bring up some actual
info about our podcast itself. We got our first iTunes review / rating.
Thanks, Mom.
Well, I was going to make her make this person anonymous, but yes, if you want to give it away.
Yeah, it was my mom.
Chelsea One gave us 5 stars and said, "Smart, funny, quick minds. If you're a gamer, you're home. If you don't care about video games, you may be surprised by the human dilemmas explored and by the tools used to ask age-old questions in powerful new ways." Thanks, Chelsea.
So that is actually my mom. Oh, my man. Mom wrote that review. And I have had, I've been having a lot. We had dinner yesterday and we had a long discussion about a couple of our podcasts. She is like a loyal listener at this point.
That's awesome.
So I have to like watch what I say now big time.
I feel bad. I'm sorry, Charles's mom, that I initially thought it sounded spammy just because it's so high level.
Human dilemmas explored, yeah, right?
It's like way too well written for
couldn't
an iTunes
possibly
review.
Yeah, be someone who would listen to us.
Exactly. Like this doesn't sound like our audience, but if this is our audience, that's great because that actually makes me happy.
But it's really cool and I appreciate this a lot because we had a long, interesting conversation about video games and, you know, Mass Effect. She's a huge sci-fi fan. And, you know, we kind of discussed on last week's show about, you know, how she was playing Drop 7 and we were having that conversation. It's sort of, it's opening up a new chapter in our
That's
relationship.
That's great. Wow.
So, yeah.
we are cool. We're opening new avenues of communication here at the Escort Mission. Yeah, actually, I took a trip up to Anaheim with my wife to visit in-laws for Mother's Day and we listened to...
I believe the term is girlfriend.
womanly caller. My womanly caller, Robin. We actually listened to almost 2 full episodes of the podcast. That's how long our podcasts are. Even a drive to Anaheim and back, I couldn't finish 2 episodes of our show. It takes like 2 hours to get there. Anyway, so yeah, thanks. You know, people go to iTunes, give us more reviews and ratings.
Yes,
that's a great way to communicate to us. It also helps bump up our visibility in the iTunes store. I mean, we probably need like 10,000 reviews to even be, you know, scoffed at by Apple, but still.
I wonder if we're 15 days in, I should reapply for the App Store affiliate program and see if they won't
do it.
Kick us out again.
I just want to mention this one interesting article real quick that I read by the PR guy at Krillbyte Studio, a game development studio that just started in Norway. They're still working on their first project, got about 10 people. It's kind of a follow-up to the In Defense of Boring article that we talked a few podcasts ago. The basic crux of the article was he was kind of decrying, because their project they're working on seems, you know, kind of art gamey. There's some screenshots, but there's no gameplay or anything, so I don't really know what it's going to be like. But basically saying that too many games are still set up for maximum fun / addiction and not really giving the player time to dwell and think and, you know, kind of, I don't want to say meditate, but kind of think about what's going on in the game rather than just trying to get that next achievement, trying to, you know, get your numbers up and get the high score. Some choice quotes. He actually used 2 games to use as examples of games that, you know, their studio is interested in that he thinks they should make more of, which is Dear Esther,
yeah,
or Esther,
which was just on sale on Steam today,
and it's almost not a game.
50%.
Right, it's almost not a game. Like there, I don't think there are any enemies. You don't have any like weapons or actions. It's you're just kind
it's
of walking
a story
around.
That you reveal by walking around an environment.
Although it changes every time.
Spoilers. And
you get
the premise.
You get different things, so you're supposed to play through it many times. The other one is Journey, which we played last week, and I think we'd all agree is amazing and very different from the kind of game that he's decrying against. So some of the quotes that I found interesting about the article was, "Through examining what the player is thinking about and striving for while playing, we can find out what the games are really about. And in the end, the subtitle of most games could just as well be, quote, the epic adventure of numbers and progress bars." In sort of to combat that, he basically believes, quote, "If an aspect of a game compromises the project's intent and vision, it should of course be discarded, even though some people might find the feature to be fun. This comes quite naturally to all the other forms of expression. Isn't it about time it becomes the norm in games? Just imagine what Guernica would have become if Picasso decided to include some slapstick for broader appeal." So, I think in general here at the Escort Mission, we like thought-provoking games just as much as we like games that are just, you know, fun action. You know, not every game has to make you, you know, think about the greater mysteries of life.
We like Fez and Super Stardust.
Right. And even though we may have, you know, dumped on Call of Duty players several times, I think, you know, we can still find enjoyment in that kind of game, even if that's not the only kind of game we want to play. So, The only reason I bring this up is that I think it just makes it a little more clear, because when we were talking about In Defense of Boring, I feel like the whole time we were trying to figure out exactly what the guy was saying and what we were even discussing. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you brought up Eco, because I think it's another good example of that game where you know, there is no score in that game. There may be trophies or achievements or something, but I don't think anybody really plays.
It was before the day of those.
Right. And
oh, actually the new edition probably does have them.
Yeah, I think it does. I think I've seen a couple things pop up.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think that ruins the game, but Charles, do you think that maybe for a game like that, that almost feels particularly like unnecessary? Like you got through level 1 or
you have always found trophies and achievements to be fairly unnecessary. I couldn't tell you what my gamer score is. I think it's over 10,000, but that's like...
Let's hope it's at least over 9,000. That's all that matters.
It's 14,300.
Okay.
No, 62.
Yeah. I don't really... I have never really cared about that stuff. I know that there are people for whom it's very important. And I think it's interesting to think about why it's important and the type of player for whom it is important.
Because numbers
and bigger numbers
and stats, come on,
and like, well, progressively, no, bigger numbers.
Okay, well, but what about in the earlier days of games where that was really all there was? I mean, you played Pac-Man,
yeah,
ostensibly because you had a number and you were trying to make that number as high as possible, and there was, you know, there was
it's also interesting
life that, thoughts about Pac-Man, unless you really thought
it is
about
the
it.
Very rare game that doesn't have a score, but Eco certainly does still have progression,
right,
in exactly the same way, you know, that any other game has it. It has, you know, enhanced character abilities and, you know, a progression through an environment as opposed to a progression via score. But I think, as you know, it's one of the, you know, interestingly, like Fez, which is sort of a similar, you know, a game that has room to breathe and is not about enemies and, you know, you sort of think and it's contemplative and meditative, is all about that sort of collect them all, mm-hmm, type thing.
It's a Pokemon,
like,
game.
It feels like Eco in a lot of ways, but under the covers, it's like, I got, you know, 28 anti-cubes and goddamn me if I'm not going to get 32 by the end of this thing. Like,
right. So do you think it would have been a better game had there just not been cubes and,
I don't know,
just puzzles to solve?
I don't think it would have been. Geez, I don't know. I liked finding those cubes, and they do give you kind of a sense of. I mean, what Eco is doing in lieu of that is opening up new areas to explore and you know, well, getting you toward the end of a goal. You actually don't even know the goal. That's another interesting thing. You start that game, you have no idea what the goal is, other than sort of like
escape, survive.
Fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
not die.
And Journey, I think, man, the more I think about that game, and, you know, I'm not sure if we're doing a spoiler cast about everything that happens in the game, but the ending of it.
I think
it,
we should talk about it.
Yeah. So the last scene.
Potential Journey spoilers.
Yeah.
Skip ahead 10 minutes.
The last scene, the more I think about it in my head, was really, really fucking emotional. You know, like you're basically going up this like castle mountain, you know, environment, and it's cold and the wind is pushing you back, and, you know, your scarf is basically getting frozen and you're losing your ability to
this
leap.
Thing that you spent the whole game,
yeah,
building up and taking pride in.
Yeah. And you keep talking, you keep using your talking ability. And if you have
a
character,
gives you all of your capabilities, all of your abilities in the game come from.
Right. And it's like taking away your very essence,
yeah,
and you keep trying to get back to it. You keep trying to get to you know, keep hold of it, and your voice gets quieter and quieter until, like, you basically can't speak anymore, and you try to use that speak ability, and you're basically mute, and you know, the last part, you're just slowly, and, you know, you keep getting slower and slower as you trudge up this mountain towards you know, the end that you hope.
What you do not know.
Yeah, you don't know exactly what you're going for, but you have this compulsion to keep walking forward. At least I did. And you keep getting slower and slower, and like the music starts petering out and it just gets silent, and it's almost like, you know, you're about to die and you're walking towards the great white light, and like, you know, you have no idea what's going to happen. And my breath was just like caught in my throat, like for a good 2 minutes, like, what is going to happen? I can't stop pushing forward, but it keeps getting slower. And I think he's going to drop to the ground. Then what? And then he drops to the ground, and then it kind of like, yeah. And yeah, I can't think of many other games that had that unique of a experience. And there was nothing about collecting, and there was no score, and there was no achievement, and there was no dialogue, and there was not even any characters besides you lonely trudging on your journey to whatever that end was going to be. And
well you and your
they were gone by that point. I was alone
at the very end. Yes.
Yeah, at the very end. You
but
are
all
alone
through most that of
that was your
mountain.
Experience though.
Oh, so it could have happened with someone
experiences
else.
Experiences can vary to a decent
okay
end.
I just assumed that they naturally...
He was with you through most of that,
right,
the mountain
but
level.
But at the very end, I was at alone. End, I just yeah assumed that was normal, but I don't know. Yeah, I only played through it once, so...
I believe my first experience was different from yours significantly at the end.
That's cool.
But honestly, I don't remember exactly what happened, but when we were playing together, I felt like, oh my God, this is different. This is not what happened to me. Hmm. Yeah, repeatedly.
We went on a new journey. So yeah, games like that.
Yeah.
Sweet. Wow. Absolutely.
So I agree with the sentiment, but, you know, I love games like Journey and Eco, but I hesitate to make absolutes. Yeah. I believe somewhere near the beginning of that, he said, you know, if something is fun, but I forget what the negative part was, it should be eschewed from the game. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that, you know, I think it depends on the type of game you're making, obviously. And I would disagree with making statements like, you know, because it was fun, it should be removed.
Yeah, I'm sort of with you. That, I mean, I think if you're going to kick it out of the game in lieu of something else that's fun, but that better supports your vision for the game, fine. Like, that's what we want the auteur to do. But if it's just, like, getting kicked out and it actually makes the game worse, like, less fun and, you know, maybe your vision is better supported. I mean, I guess it's an artistic choice. Right, but it might not be. I mean, the thing about a game is it is an interactive medium, and you are more than anything else, more than any other medium. You have to consider your player as part of it, right? Other than maybe like live theater or something.
Yeah, I think his main point, as I said in the second quote, I'll repeat: if an aspect of a game compromises the project's intent and vision, it should of course be discarded, even if that feature may be fun to someone. Yeah. So I think it'd be like, well, okay, it would have been cool in Journey if I had a gun and could shoot people. That's a fun mechanic, but that has nothing to do with the vision and intent of that project. So he's saying
you would change the vision.
Don't add boobies to it because that will now appeal to the Call of Duty 18 to 35 demographic and you'll get more money. Like he said, you know, the main problem with games now, right now, is that
Journey to boobs.
That they're still made, you know, to make money mainly, like most of them are not made to be artistic statements.
Yeah, but
they're overly commercial still.
But I also do support the games with just boobs and guns.
That's true. So you're a huge fan of Duke Nukem then forever, right?
No,
your favorite game of all time or one of your favorites. I'm gonna BGE that later.
No, but man,
well, man, that'll be fun.
Terra is full of boobs. No guns though that I've seen yet.
Boobs and pandas, right?
Yes.
Panda boobs.
Okay, so another thing I wanted to mention, I listened to the new Tenacious D album today, Rise of the Phoenix, because they put it out for free in its entirety on SoundCloud, which was rather nice of them. It was Tenacious D, although I think its ultimate weakness is that it did not have enough Rage Cage. It was like all Jebbles, as he now is referring to him, or J-Balls or something. Anyway, I mean, I love Jack Black, and he's got a great voice, and it was rocking, but I think one of the best parts of their very first album was the interplay between them, like that comedy duo thing. And honestly, most of the songs were just Jack Black. It was like Jack Black, the album, and there was only like maybe two comedy bits, and I think maybe it was a little self-indulgent on his part and not really the team effort that makes them super awesome. It was only kind of awesome.
Well, are the lyrics still kind of funny?
You know, it's exactly what you would expect from a Tenacious D album. Some of the songs almost maybe push that envelope a little too much just for the sake of being like obscene. And yeah. I didn't really like love those songs, but it has some good songs, and it's what you'd expect from the D.
I think the earlier album might have gone a little too far in the speaking ratio to music.
Maybe.
I mean, it worked well. It was good. I was a fan of it. But I see why they might have moved away from that, from as much speaking, kind of a higher music ratio.
But I really wish they would have kept KG. I don't know. One of the best songs was at the very end of that album, City Hall, and their like back and forth makes that song. And he goes for like five or six songs in a row where there's like no KG in it at all. And
I mean,
like,
he's playing on the song, right?
He's playing, but the backup vocals or just the back and forth of them talking or anything. I don't know. I really liked that as part of the first album, and I missed it in this one. So
there's a good episode of the Nerdist podcast. Mm-hmm. So Nerdist podcast sucks.
I
have to mention bullshit. That.
Don't listen to that.
Terrible.
Every podcast that comes out, total BS. That was good. With Jack Black and
Kyle Gass.
Kyle Gass.
Cage. Rage Cage.
Are
Jibbles.
The guests on that episode. And it's interesting. They talk about it. They play a couple of the songs. It's worth a listen.
Okay, so I haven't actually talked about any games I played, so I'm just going to talk about one quickly and then one that I hope has a discussion. I tried the Portal 2 level editor.
Uh-huh.
It's a free update to Portal 2. It's a great level editor.
What did you do it on Mac?
You can do it on either, and I did it on Mac, yeah. It's actually really good. I mean, it is simplistic. It's like a little flash thing that gives you a room, and it gives you a little pull-out sidebar with all the pieces, and you just drag and drop and right-click the properties like you were building a Visual Basic program or something. And then you can immediately go into the game 3D and walk around and see how it works, and then you can compile it, and it starts up the game engine, and you can play your level immediately.
So were you trying it for educational purposes, or are you going to make us a sweet level?
I think I might try. The only problem. Okay, so here's the problem. Yeah, as with most creative pursuits, no matter how cool the tool is or how fun you think it might be to make one, you still need an idea. And I don't currently have an idea. So if you guys have ideas for the kind of level you want to make, I will try to make it. But I don't have an idea right now.
An escort mission.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's smart enough to do that. It's not the hammer level editor, which is essentially the one that the game makers use to make all the levels. It's kind of a...
You could probably put robot...
Just do the room in the shape of TEM.
Oh, that's a
cop-out. And build a puzzle in there.
I don't like that. I want you to try to...
I'm just trying to give him...
I want you to try to put it...
Yeah, give me a realistic goal.
I want you to put a robot in there, and you have to get the robot somewhere else to execute, like a button or something.
It could just be the cube, the companion cube.
Not just the cube. Cubes have been done. Cubes on switches have been done. I want robots on cubes.
It could be a turret or one of the Franken
cubes,
maybe.
That's what I'm talking about.
All right. I'll think about that. Okay. But no, it's really well done. I was glad to see how accessible it is, because I know level editors can be daunting, especially if they try to give you too much control. I think this is a perfect compromise of just enough fun, stuff to play with, but not... literally being able to change everything about the game. Like, cool. Yeah. So kudos, Valve.
I found those cubes with turret leg body.
The Franken cubes.
Them.
Yeah.
So fucking disturbing when I was playing
that
game.
My level will have nothing but those everywhere.
They were really, really creepy for some reason.
Make the walls out of them.
Oh, God. Okay. And then the one game that I haven't been playing a lot of games lately, the one game I do want to talk about is also an old game, not as old as Eco, but it is Penny Arcade Adventures on the Rain Slick Precipice of Darkness, episode one. So it was cheap or free on Mac, on Steam. Yeah, I'm playing it on my Mac.
Did I just hear about an iOS version of that?
I don't know if you did. Maybe, I don't know.
You will.
Probably, eventually.
Exclusive.
Yeah. It'll be on Atari 2600 eventually. So I started playing it, and I had actually played it before when it first came out, but didn't really get into it. I think I just played the demo. So this time I actually bought the full game, and I've played a few hours of it. Have you guys played it at all? Do you know?
I played the demo.
And what did you think about the
demo? I got like halfway through. I got pretty far.
Oh, through the full game?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it was on sale on Steam probably 2 years ago.
Right.
Yeah, I played the demo and didn't even get all the way through that.
So, you know, it's definitely not a perfect game. It's not my favorite game of all time. It is kind of a throwback to sort of a, you know, Final Fantasy VII, you know, like...
Have you seen the latest one, new game?
Yeah, that's an even more of a throwback, turning into, like, Final Fantasy I. I don't know. I still think I might want to play it based solely on the fact that it's as if you're playing an interactive Penny Arcade comic. Like, the dialogue and the descriptions of things are actually kind of funny and witty and interesting, and I don't play many games where the writing actually had that much, like... weight, like, in the thinking of the game.
So I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm going to interrupt right now. My mom just texted me, just heard your score for Drop 7, which we discussed on a previous podcast. You realize you have to die, right? I mean, no hard feelings. So, hi, Mom. I'm podcasting as I receive your text.
Thanks, Chelsea.
Yeah.
So I think I agree to some extent, but I think the game was the wrong genre. You know, if I could just play through to see the dialogue and the character animations, and it were like an adventure game or something that I could click through, like a what's the company? Back to the Future, yeah,
like a Sierra or LucasArts,
Telltale,
game.
Telltale,
yeah, Telltale, yeah.
I was actually expecting that, I would have played all the way through, but it got real grindy in the middle. Oh. It's this, like, you know, RPG-ish. That it takes too long to get in and out of combat, and the combat isn't super interesting. And then when you're out of combat, you have to walk all over the place back and forth to do quests that are super annoying, like wasting too much time walking and on combat when all I wanted to do is see the dialogue. So I did like it, but I thought it was too grindy. Now, I think it's funny that the third one is going like super even grindy. More into like Final Fantasy I territory or whatever, which might...
It may not be grindy. I don't know.
Because
yeah.
When those are executed in a modern fashion, which is very, very fast in and out of the combat, and very fast during the combat, like 30-second, was it 30-second hero?
Mm-hmm.
Half-minute hero. Yeah. That thing is brilliant. What else? There's some others, indies that were recent, that are just like that genre, where you just, like... hit A a bunch of times and you get through combat so fast.
So the company that's doing the new one is the ones they did Cthulhu Saves the World.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, then it's going to be good because Cthulhu is pretty good.
So there's an excellent, Penny Arcade's bullshit, but they did an excellent version of episode of Penny Arcade TV, their TV show, just about this very topic and about the new game and about their thoughts on the old game. And what they would have done differently. And I think they probably had kind of the same sense about that game as we've just discussed. And their thoughts about it are similar about the new one.
Awesome.
Like, there's specifically people in there talking about how, like, you know, the combat should be as fun the 50th and the 500th time that you enter into it as it is the first time. And, you know, that's like a direct quote, stuff like that.
That's so hard to do, though. Easier said than done.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard to do.
But they're thinking about it.
And it's funny because I actually find the combat more interesting than you do. It's odd because,
play for a few more hours.
The general structure of it, yes, is dated and kind of grindy. But, I don't know. I think it has enough, at least in its mold, which may not be a great mold, it's one of the better versions of it because, you know, it has the, you have to pay attention, you know, it's not like Half-Minute Hero or something where you can literally like sleep through it by holding down the A button, fight, 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 fight. I find that actually to be kind of annoying because if it's a big part of the game, they're basically saying this big part of the game sucks balls and we gave you a way to get out of it. Like, we're basically admitting that this big part of the game we made is balls, but don't worry, we'll let you just hold the A button down to get through it.
Yeah, those are the two options. Basically, make it go so fast that it's entertaining, or
not entertaining.
Make it actually challenging and interesting.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting and challenging.
But I don't think it's challenging or interesting enough for long enough, so I dare you. Just finish it this week. Get back to us next week.
He dares you.
Yeah. I've also been watching PATV, and I'm almost through the third season. I have not gotten to that episode yet, but yeah, freaking PATV, man, I love that.
Shit's great.
I love that show. Like, I wouldn't think that just listening to them episode after episode just sit and talk about the comic that I've already read, what went into making it, but they're just fascinating people who have great conversations every time.
The fourth panel ones where they're actually writing the comic.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Those are awesome. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I wouldn't think that would necessarily continually be entertaining, but that's because they are entertaining people who have great conversations.
It's the creative process. Like, just watching them come up with the idea is super fun. Like, it's the DVD extras, right?
The one that I just watched was the one where they were talking about the gay sex scene in Mass Effect 3.
Yeah.
And
where's all the gay sex?
And Tycho reveals something about himself that Jerry reveals something that Mike just the way he like sits on the couch with like his head just kind of like resting right there, and then he's like, Are you serious? You're fucking with me, right? You're right. And Jerry's just like totally straight faced about it.
Yeah.
I love so brave.
Well, I liked
yes, Mike. I like watching penis on penis action. Get over it.
I like the the Penny Arcade blog post about that episode of PATV. He said, "All this is bullshit, by the way, and those guys suck."
So does Amazon, but buy stuff.
Amazon's awesome,
but buy stuff. Buy us.
The blog post, he said, we don't even remember that the cameras are in the room, as I'm sure you will find out. Link and link to that episode.
Have you guys ever watched the Chris and Scott and Chris show?
Yes.
With Kurtz and that's actually a really good show
too.
They're funny and they do funny stuff, and they have a very different dynamic from Jerry and Mike.
They do the Blamimations as well.
The Blamimations, those are different. I don't know.
Those are hit and miss.
Those are hit and miss. Yeah, kind
of
sketch
comedy.
Some
of them are super funny, and
have you watched any
of
the other shows? They have like 20 gajillion shows on there now. Like
I haven't watched. I watched the there's one called The Adventures of Lilo and Ix, which is like. Very high concept, and I didn't really get into it. And they have like Checkpoint, which is like a news thing that I have not watched.
I'm way behind. I like that stuff and I want to watch it, but there is not a convenient enough way for me to watch it. What I want is I want to queue up all those things and play them automatically. Like, I want them in my Hulu queue. I want to watch TV like I watch TV.
Yeah.
Right? I don't want to subscribe to cable. But I want like internet video.
I gotta say, it's
to
not
go into
that
a queue.
It's one of the easy. You hit next when it's done, and then you hit next.
You
when
have
it's
to
done.
Find your mouse, and you have to like move the cursor.
Oh, I found my mouse. There it is.
No, when you're on a couch like watching TV, right? It's a completely different experience than sitting in front of a computer
I think your ridiculously high barrier to entry on things is keeping you from good
stuff.
I'm
not saying it's impossible.
I don't even think it's high. I think it's super low. You move your mouse and you click on a button and it starts.
You don't watch as much YouTube as Charles does. Right? Remember Charles talked about these random YouTube shows that are good, and you're like, but I don't watch a lot of YouTube at home.
Yeah.
You understand my point.
You can enqueue
like,
stuff in YouTube.
I know, but I want a universal internet queue for internet video.
Yeah.
I want my browser I want all these different sites to support RSS or some equivalent for their video feeds.
Model.
And I want my Chrome to just play all these videos on all these different sites in a row or some shit like that.
Pack something together like that with one of those like Read Later type apps, right? Where you like I have this Chrome extension called Read Later Fast, and you right click on stuff and it just saves a whole list of things for you to read later. I bet you could.
So there
find
might
a way
there
to
might
do that.
Be a hack for something like that, but for reading articles and stuff, RSS is the standard.
Yeah,
and so I really if everyone put all their videos into RSS, maybe that would be it. And then I just need an RSS player that plays one and then the next, right? Or if everyone put their TV show on Hulu, that would do it. Or if everyone put all their shit on YouTube, that would do it. But, I want everyone to subscribe to the same, format.
Standards.
So I can use one app instead of, navigating a browser to all these different sites.
Right. I agree. That would be ideal. But I don't think that the way they have it set up is
obviously it's a good
enough
show.
Of a barrier not to watch it.
But it is a barrier to, a larger audience, is what I'm saying.
Yep.
So, anything else?
Since we've gone over an hour and we're only done with me, I think I'm done.
No, we're done with me too. We have Josh left.
Right, right. It took us an hour to get through two of us of general chatter. You remember how we said we were going to make this like a 45-minute show? Yeah, that will never happen.
Hey, don't say that to me. That was you guys.
All right, I knew the eco thing was going to spark up.
You have precisely 5 minutes. Go.
I'll go through a bunch of things real quick first. There is a language immersion for Chrome extension that is the sickest shit ever. Huh. If you have
Translate.
If you have any interest in learning another language or getting better at another language, you know a little bit of, open the Chrome App Store and search for language immersion for Chrome and enable it. And then, yes, it integrates with Google Translate. And every page that you visit from then on, while it's on, and you can just click it in the corner to turn it off, it translates the whole page behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And then depending on your slider bar for novice, intermediate, expert, etc., it replaces every, 10th word or phrase with, the other language translation, right? And so
it randomly puts a foreign word in the middle of a sentence?
No, it translates a word.
Well, I mean, right, okay, yes. So it translates one word in the middle of an otherwise English
sentence.
Sometimes
it's one word to just help you with vocabulary, yes.
That would seem confusing, I think.
It's a little bit confusing, but sometimes it does, forward phrases or something like that as appropriate.
That's cool.
So the grammar of the full sentence is not always left intact.
Right.
But Google Translate isn't perfect when translating full sentences intact, right?
Yeah.
But it can get little phrases and words pretty accurately. So I've been, I took a few years of Spanish way back in the day, but I've forgotten most
haven't
of it.
Haven't we all?
But I've had that little on novice Spanish for almost all my browsing for a couple weeks, and I've learned like a bunch of random Spanish words.
Nice.
It hasn't.
Give us a selection. Give us three.
I'm not good at examples.
What?
But
fail.
Anyway, I recommend it.
That sounds
else?
Cool. That sounds really sweet.
It's super
I love
sweet.
That idea.
Highly recommend it. Internet Explorer 9 might be coming to the Xbox. That sounds.
I also heard that.
Super dope.
Well, a browser of any sort.
That sounds super dope.
Yes.
Well, it's a browser of any sort.
That sounds super
dope.
No,
it's the first potentially like reasonably decent HTML5 browser on an embedded box that almost everyone has. Like, the PlayStation browser is complete shit and always has been. The PlayStation Vita or PSP browser is complete shit and always has been.
Does Apple TV have a browser in it?
Nope.
It's
not meant to be a general internet browsing machine.
The Wii browser is complete shit.
It's got the A5 in it. It could obviously run Safari.
Well, I know, but it's not meant to be a search the internet.
It's a question of
haphazardly
whether the hardware is capable. Yeah. It's like whether they want to allow you to, and whether they want to invest the time to make it a good experience.
Sure, yeah.
And so similarly. PlayStation had the shitty browser in there since launch, and
let's Microsoft not forget about the Wii browser.
I know I mentioned
it. Yeah,
and so did the Wii, right? But the Xbox never had one because they were waiting until they wanted to do it right. And this sounds like they're actually going to do it right.
It sounds like Kinect, right? Like if you're going to be searching phrases,
it is going to support Kinect voice and hand control, which
it's really the voice. Like that's what you want.
It could be very good.
You don't want to be typing, even that thumb keyboard thing. You don't want to be typing.
As rebellious as this might seem, the more that I've used machines that have like specific apps for specific functions rather than a general purpose browser, especially on a TV machine, like internet machine, rather than a general purpose computer, I'm not really sure how much I miss a general purpose browser on a machine like that.
Well,
I don't feel like I'm waiting for that.
It's you have 10-foot experience versus the 3-foot experience.
You have a computer plugged into your TV upstairs.
Right, which
so that you can browse on the TV,
which gets used very sparingly and goes to like 3 sites ever, really. When you get it, I don't use it like I use my computer here or I use my computer at work, where I'm constantly looking at articles and stuff. It's so infrequent as to be like I probably wouldn't miss
it. I don't know.
It.
I use your computer on your TV almost every time I come over, so for me, it's a high ratio. Because I use
my only TV is a computer.
If there's like 10 good apps that duplicate the sites that you would normally go to, like a wiki app and a YouTube app and a et cetera app that are specifically made for that format, I feel like those would almost be more useful than just a general purpose browser.
So I think that you are right that...
Which is what they've been doing this whole time.
A version designed specifically for that experience is probably going to be better than using a browser at a 10-foot range, right?
Right.
However, I think that there is no substitute for having it available,
for Google.
Which is what you're talking about, which is what Josh is talking about.
For Google.
Right.
I want to Google and hit like actual web results, not like restricted partial Google, only Google YouTube results and only Microsoft Bing property results.
Yeah, so the 10 apps that cover 90% of your browsing are awesome, and that experience is probably better. But for the other 10% that they don't cover, you know, you want to have that browser.
Right,
available.
And for those, and like, nice, I have my phone, nice, and I have my iPad, and or my laptop is sitting there. I guess...
I'm not saying that
it's
this
useful.
Is super,
I just feel like I don't use it that
I'm
much.
I'm not saying this is super relevant to me, mm-hmm, personally. I just wanted to mention it because I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had a computer plugged into my TV for 10 years. You've had a computer plugged into your TV for several. Charles has for a couple. You just built one a year ago or something.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I didn't build it. It actually just broke today. It literally broke today, yesterday rather. It will not turn on. It's an Acer Aspire Revo little like net top that has been my only TV. It is my set top box. It's everything. And is a month out of
Besides
warranty.
Your cable box. You have regular cable ones.
No.
You have the AT&T.
I have UVerse for internet, but I have no cable service.
Oh, yeah. I forgot you canceled it.
Yeah. Okay. So it's 1 year out of warranty. It's like a year and a month. So it's a month out of warranty. Total bullshit. However, I bought it with an American Express card via Amazon.com. Ding, ding.
And they
and
American
Express
warranty.
Extends your warranty by years.
Oh, nice.
So
nice.
Hopefully, I just put the claim in today. But yeah, that fucker won't turn on anymore. It's like, what?
Minecraft just came out on Xbox.
Yep.
Sold like a million copies in
a
week.
Think about that.
Holy
a
crap.
A million.
They also have
launch
problems.
At $20.
Yeah.
And over 5 million hours played, like a week in. That's average of like 5 hours per user. That's like successful MMO territory. And this is a game that's already been on PC for a while, right?
Apparently a lot of people don't have PCs and only have consoles, which is kind of the
thing that's
the thing now.
Is
because why would you play it there?
Split screen multiplayer.
That's the one feature
that is
that's missing on PC.
Deal.
Yes.
So you mean like two people can play?
Yeah,
on the
you
same
remember
box.
How
two people
we
can
always
build the same shit at the same time?
We would get
right.
laptops
next
and sit them next to each other in order to do that. But now anyone, you know, it's more accessible for people that don't all have laptops. You know, two people in front of just an Xbox on a TV can now play.
Yeah. And that is a really big deal because, you know, when we would do the thing, we'd get, you know, five laptops around a table, you know. Somebody would say, like, oh, help me with this. And you'd be like, okay, what? Get up from the table, walk around, look, go back to your station. You know, that I complain about
bullshit.
This all the time.
I know.
And
walking.
The split screen.
Overrated.
Getting up.
The split screen multiplayer experience. The
I love
same
it.
Screen split screen multiplayer is so great and is so, it's just like out the window in like 95% of games that come out these days. And it's annoying. I love that.
I didn't really think of Minecraft as a game that really
what are you
was
talking about?
Hurting for that.
We only ever played it together.
Yeah, you played it with Robin.
Yeah, with my own computer and the whole screen and not sharing it with someone else and being able to set up a server and customize the crap out of it. Like that was half the fun for me was running a server and, you know, getting plugins.
Well, you can run a server. You can just leave your Xbox on all the time.
Right. I don't know. It just like after playing it like countless hours on the PC, playing it on the Xbox, despite that cool multiplayer thing, is a huge downgrade.
Again, I'm not saying you should go buy it.
No,
I'm just
won't.
Saying,
fuck that game.
It's impressive. Got to a lot of new people.
Yeah,
actually, Minecraft's pretty cool.
Yeah, super.
Come
cool.
back to my server, please.
Robot Unicorn Attack Evolution.
Oh shit!
I saw that.
Seriously?
Yeah, you morph into different animals.
I am not kidding. This is the shit. It is Robot Unicorn Attack exactly, except new graphics and you know a little bit more polished.
What's
and
it?
Such.
What platforms?
I think it's just web browser.
AdultSwim.com.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have it on iOS.
Yeah. Oh, actually, it might be coming to those things shortly, but I know it just launched on Adult Swim, and man, you morph into a unicorn panda, and then you morph into a unicorn wolf, and then I haven't got past the wolf yet, but man, that shit is great.
Oh, they already spoiled.
Is it the same song what, or different song?
Don't spoil it. It I
was
don't
in
know.
It was in the article that told me it existed.
I didn't read an article. Don't tell me the
So
animals.
What, you just saw a random picture somewhere?
No, I went there.
Oh.
Played
and it. Didn't have a description. Okay, well, the Kotaku article said the, all the animals or something.
I don't want to know all the animals. So I want to get past the
I can't believe you
wolf.
Didn't read it through
the same
Kotaku.
Same song or a different song?
Same song.
Same song.
It has to be the song? Same song. That would be such a travesty if it wasn't. That's 90% of that game is listening to that song.
Yeah.
It's a music video that you interact with.
And basically, I played a shit ton of Terra. So Terra came out like 2 weeks ago yep. or so, and I didn't start at launch, but for some reason, like, I read about it and got excited about playing it a week after launch. And it's, man, it is an MMO. It
it's
is
an MMO-ass MMO.
So
it
brave.
Is an MMO-ass MMO. To some extent, it is like
MMO.
It is like not. It is an old MMO style MMO, like original WoW style.
EverQuest, but, maybe Ultima Online.
No,
can go back that far.
No, original WoW style.
Ultima Online still has some of the coolest aspects.
I really wish I was into multiplayer MMOs when that came out, because that always sounds. Like the Wild Wild West.
They actually MMOs. Have like player-owned property and houses and...
Yeah, well, this one has a few of those things that some of the weird ones have had that I've never played with before. It has a political system mm-hmm. where literally every real-time month you elect Vanarchs for these provinces. Like, so if you are a leader of a guild of 20 or more people and you get to level 50 or higher and you donate like 3,000 gold or something, then you can run for office and you have to get elected by the populace and you hold position for 3 or 4 weeks.
Huh.
And then you set the taxes on your area.
No shit.
And you choose like which like special NPC merchants and stuff are available in your
wow.
province. And
That's
you
cool.
set the... The PvP, like, player kill policy.
Interesting.
In your province. Like, whether or not people are outlaws for murdering people.
Nice.
And, or whether or not it's, like, a law and order type situation, you know, or whether it's chaos.
Do you have to fund the police force?
Like SimCity?
No, I think people are basically the police force, like the guilds that are into PKK, like
okay.
that only kill the player killers. But I think there's a system in place for, like, you know, if you kill someone and provoked, you get flagged as an outlaw or something. I don't know exactly what that means.
Huh. They should call them the Dexters.
Right.
PKKs.
I'm not super into that yet, the politics and PvP. I don't know a lot about it yet because I'm pretty low. I'm got to level 20 or so. With two different characters and 10 or so with a third.
What's the cap right now?
60. So the way that it is different and unique, besides some minor things like that and the quest system, when you click on the type of animal you have to kill 10 of or the NPC that you need to talk to, it literally shows you the exact location on the map of where that is. Like a little, like it shows you a dot for every animal of that species. In the vicinity, stuff like that. Anyway, the primary way that's different is the combat. And the combat is like a legit real-time action RPG, like God of War or something like that, where you actually swing and attack, and if it touches them, it does damage, and there is no percentage chance to block or dodge. You literally have to dodge to dodge. And you literally have to hold up a shield and block to block, like Demon Souls.
Fucking bizarre concept.
It is a really bizarre concept for an MMO. Yeah,
dodge to dodge.
It's not like, hey, I have 20% block rate no matter what I'm doing.
It's not just like cooldown timer button press.
Well, it does have cooldowns on abilities. It still has that, you know, it is a hybrid combat system where it's still kind of like a traditional MMO,
mm-hmm.
but it has all these action aspects.
You actually have to aim, like, your missile attacks and
your
spells.
If you're
and
ranged,
stuff.
Your missile attacks go where your cursor, your reticle is pointing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you literally have to point them, and people can dodge them, and you have to...
Again, this is a concept I'm completely unfamiliar with.
Yeah. But the thing about these systems, like the advantage that none of the reviewers mention, because they never get into them because they don't want to waste too much time or whatever, is that they really have a depth of strategy that is, you know, more thorough and worthy of a time commitment than a random single player game. You know, like to me, Bayonetta and God of War type games are button mashers.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you just hit a bunch of buttons, you dodge a little bit or whatever they require you to do to
other than perhaps move like Ninja on. Gaiden. Ninja Gaiden is one that people talk about is like, that's actually a real combat system.
Yeah. My example would be Dark Souls, Demon Souls for the more advanced, more interesting combat system in that genre where you actually have to have a lot of skill and practice and, yeah, so those are the really good ones there. But MMOs have this, you know, depth of mastering your class and learning, you know, the boss types and then the teamwork for dungeons and raids and stuff that I've always appreciated that reviewers never seem to appreciate. So I'm basically playing this as a series of dungeons and the rest of the game is really pretty. And so I think I'm going to play Lancer as my main so I can tank every dungeon all the way up. So we'll see how that goes, how long that lasts.
Sweet.
Lance it away, Lancelot. All right, host.
All right.
Start hosting.
Are we going to do a best game ever? How long have we gone?
We're
Jesus
about,
Christ.
We're about an hour 20.
F it. It's over.
We were going to skip it twice?
Yeah. You know, okay, so here's my thought. Because Josh had already mentioned a best game ever he wanted to do, and we're probably just going to agree with him. And
all right.
We're not going to
We're doing it.
Discuss. Okay, let's and do it. I really don't want to skip it again.
All right.
I like this thing.
All right.
Let's do this.
Braid.
Fuck
Braid.
It. Hate that game. It's bullshit.
Braid is
hitting down stop.
Vote. The best game ever. Playing a lot of Fez recently, it reminded me, I talked about this a little bit last week, like how fucking phenomenal and virtually perfect Braid is. So I went back and I played the whole thing last week. Again, all the way through, and I was hoping to God, because my memory is so terrible. I forget people's names and faces. I forget like movies I saw and plot lines. Who are you guys?
Forget Spanish words.
Where am I?
You've learned on your
yeah. I forget immersion. Spanish words I learned this week. So I was hoping to God that I would forget these Braid puzzles and wouldn't, you know, would have to refigure them out.
Uh-huh.
But I only had to refigure out like three in the whole thing, and so I blew through the whole game in less than 2 hours or whatever. But it was still freaking great because even those couple that I had to refigure out were phenomenal.
I mean, guess one of them was that key one on the where you go forward and backward and it changes the time. It forwards and reverses time. That key puzzle. I love that puzzle, but that one always gets me. Was that one of them?
It sounds like you're describing every puzzle in the game.
I assume you're being facetious for describing every puzzle in the game.
No. The specific
one. The
one
with the key where it goes back and forth with time.
There was a specific one where I think where you first get introduced to where
you
have
serious?
To move a key, and it's that world where you move forward and backward and it changes the time. Come on, it is a specific puzzle.
That's every game.
No, are you serious? No, that's bullshit.
What?
That is a specific puzzle. If I can remember the puzzle,
you're serious.
How can you not remember that puzzle?
Describe
you just
the puzzle.
Played it.
Describe the unique aspects of the puzzle.
The specific part is there's like...
Josh, you go back and forward in time and there's a key.
There's
multiple,
don't forget to mention the key.
There's multiple levels. There's like three levels with ladders in between them. And there's an area where there's... where you I think you jump over a pit and then there's the key. And you have to get the key past like a certain area. Yeah, you're right. I can't do this.
There's a pit.
The thing is
that, I love how long you tried. That was great.
Is that I know exactly what puzzle I'm thinking of. I can
know.
See it in my head.
I know.
I don't know how
it's like you
can
go forward.
It would suck if,
backwards in time
if you didn't know what you were talking about.
But I don't understand how you don't know that one. Like,
but guys, I know exactly what's in my brain right now.
That's the one that people talk
I know
about.
I know what it is.
Is it Jumpman? You're talking about Jumpman,
no.
The one that looks like Donkey Kong?
No. It's beyond that. But it is that world.
It is that world.
Well, yeah, the one where you move forward and it moves people forward, and you move backward and it moves them backwards in time, like that world.
Okay,
world
then I
four
think I know
I
the
know.
One you're talking about, which is the one that
I think it's the first time you have to use a key in that world.
At the top of the center of the world, there's a cannon that shoots to the upper right at 45 degrees. Is it that one?
the area I'm thinking of does not have a cannon. It has a little dude that moves. But the problem is that you need to get, like, the key to a different level. But as soon as you start moving backwards, the key, like, pops back down to the bottom again.
Yeah, that's the one with the cannon.
Okay. See, you know exactly what puzzle I'm talking about.
Well, now I think I figured it out.
Well, yeah, if you stop insulting me for 5 seconds and think about it, yeah, you know which one I'm talking about. Bastards. God damn, man. Just so that I'm cutting your mics. You're so, out.
Brain, it's good.
Don't do that.
The way
I'll insert something right there during that pause. Nice.
It does the portal thing. It does the thing that almost no game does as well as Braid and Portal, where it teaches you a small thing with a puzzle. It basically presents you with a challenge, and you have to learn or figure something out in order to overcome that. And then the next one that it gives you, you have to use exactly what you just learned. And then learn something more difficult on top of that.
Yes, or apply it.
And then the third one, you have to learn something else. And then the fourth one, you have to apply like two or three of the last few things you learned all at the same time. And maybe something on top of that. And so it's just paced so perfectly. The levels and puzzles are designed so elegantly. It, you know, it ramps up.
Yeah, it's. I wouldn't even call it pacing necessarily, but or just level design.
Yeah,
you know, just
really, really careful design.
Yeah,
you know, progression maybe is better than pacing. Like the way the difficulty progresses and is the sort of like Portal. Challenge. I always think of Portal when you think of Braid, like in terms of you learn just enough and it gets just hard enough as time goes on.
I think Braid's even better though in terms of,
and you always feel smart
in like perfect design. Yeah. It makes you feel so brilliant when you figure stuff out
every time. And like every the dumbest puzzle earliest on, you feel incredibly smart. And then when you get to the end, you're like, how did I not see that instantaneously?
It has so many oh shit moments.
Yeah.
Like, oh shit!
Yeah. Is that what you mean by oh shit moment?
Either like, I can't believe I can do that, or I can't believe like I figured that out, or I can't believe that just happened in the story, because even the story's cool.
Oh god, the ending of that game.
Don't talk about any spoilers.
Yeah, because... But that hasn't been spoiled yet.
If you haven't played it, like, fucking play it. Just so good. I had my dad play it for a while, and he liked it. You know, I think it's the first few levels are actually really accessible. I think, you know, anybody might meet their limit of gamer dexterity, because it does require you to be, it's at times, to be a pretty decent, like, Mario-type side-scroller. But it doesn't require that for every, you know, for most pieces or to just get through.
It gave us an amazing Soulja Boy YouTube video.
Oh, right? It was worth it for that.
Yeah.
It lets
this guy goes, look at that.
That's so hilarious. If you do get stuck anywhere, it lets you proceed on pretty much any level. You can proceed with, you know, barely any effort. Yeah. You can get through and just move on if you really need to. Man, so good in so many ways. I don't know if there's anything else to say.
You know, actually, I was curious, what do you think about, like, all the little books that have the story, and, like, what do you make of that? Do you find that interesting, or kind of pretentious, or confusing, or weird, or you don't really have any thoughts on it?
I mostly really liked the story in terms of its level of ambiguity, and, you know, as the information is revealed over time, you know, where it goes. In general, I really like it. Because, you know... As you learn more about the story as it progresses, you know, everything that you previously read is in that new context. And I love stories that are written that way. You know what I mean? So they're worth going back and rereading or replaying. But also, each one immediately before the level, it kind of references the new game mechanic that you used in that level very directly. So the story is even like... in that way, very directly tied to the actual gameplay, which is pretty unusual for a lot of games. You know, the story is just kind of on top and on a completely different layer. But this one is actually integrated into the gameplay, including the time shifting. You know, it starts on chapter 2, and you don't get to chapter 1 until the end. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Do you remember all that?
Yeah, vaguely.
Yeah.
You remember how each one at the beginning where it explains...
little snippets of the story.
Little snippets that then directly correlate to the ability that you get for that zone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was interested by how much backlash that game generated. I mean, it really... There were a lot of people who really hit that game hard just sort of generally on the internet. I don't know if any reviews did this, but it definitely came up and was a topic when it came out of how pretentious, quote unquote, the game was. And there were a lot of people who were really mad about like that. Like, I felt the game was talking down to them, or like, you know,
Soldier Boy didn't.
No, Soldier Boy did not. Soldier so, Boy is like the least pretentious person.
Yeah,
there
so
is.
Opinion
there's
invalidated.
There's not an ounce of pretension in Soldier Boy. He thought it was funny, and he told us about it.
Yeah,
yes, but a did. Lot of people really disliked it for that reason. And I found that interesting. Like, I feel it's. It seems weird to get mad at a game whose author or any sort of media, any piece of media that you want to consume whose author is like trying to say something interesting. It just seemed weird to me that people were so mad about that.
I think there's a fine line, and it's very subjective what people think of as pretentious.
Yeah.
You know, a great example is that author, was it Mieville?
Yeah.
Is that how you pronounce it?
I don't know how to pronounce it.
China or yeah. Sheena or...
Yeah, like China Mieville, yeah. The sci-fi author, mm-hmm. who, you know, some people, I'm sure, read that and go, oh, this is super cool, interesting, like it's teleporting me to this unique sci-fi world with all these weird words and objects. I need to figure out what they are. And other people would get five words in, like a Penny Arcade article mentioned this week, you know, and be like... What is this bullshit?
Waldy yeah. Thorpe.
I can't put up stopped. With these crazy words, you know? So I think
that was interesting because I've read two books by Mieville, whatever. And I never got that sense at all, but he has that same kind of backlash. So
yeah, sorry I for mean, interrupting. I think that, you know, people might feel that from the very first couple books they open in Braid. They're like, these are way too obscure. I don't understand what they're saying. What does this mean? This story is bullshit.
Yeah.
And then continue to have that opinion for the rest of the whole
but
thing.
But specifically pretentious as the you know, attack that's leveled against it.
That might, you know, one. It might have either been, you know, specifically the books, you know, what they said and then how obscure it is and then what happens at the end. It might have had to do with that and feeling like it was cheap or trying too hard mm-hmm. or something like that, just based on its style. Or it could have been, you know, interviews with Jonathan Blow in real life.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up. I think he had a lot to do with it, actually.
I'm thinking that him and the way he presented it and his press coverage and the way he talks about it and how he might seem like he thinks he's better than you or something like that.
Yeah,
I think it probably has a lot to do with his personality.
Yeah, his personality is, he's kind of an auteur and he's kind of intense about his opinions. He has strong opinions about, much like the article I read earlier where that guy from the Norwegian game company had a strong opinion about what he feels most games are. I think he's kind of up there with Jonathan Blow and that he thinks a lot of games are kind of, you know, because I know Jonathan Blow has specifically said that the template for most games is like the Michael Bay action flick, you know, blow up shit kind of thing. And he's sick of that and he doesn't want to make games like that. And he thinks that games like that are not really as worthwhile, at least, if not worthwhile at all. There's some...
If you like those kinds of games, then you'd be pissed to hear somebody insult the stuff
yeah,
that you
yeah.
like. That makes sense.
There was some blowback.
You mean like how Call of Duty sucks?
Yeah, Call of Duty. Yeah. Suck a dick, Call of Duty players.
Yeah, there was some blowback from his statements.
There's nobody who's more pretentious or is more of an auteur than like Kojima, but people don't really come at him like that, right?
Metal Gear because he's Japanese,
is fucking crazy with that stuff.
Well,
it's like, no, so over the top.
He got a lot of flack.
I think he gets
for
a lot of flack.
Yeah.
I think he gets a lot of love. Like
I think both. He gets as much flack.
I mean, obviously, we love Blow, and other people don't.
He's a polarizing figure.
There's certainly plenty of people that think Kojima's full of shit.
Yeah. I think a lot of people thought
the Metal Gears are like
ridiculous,
super pretentious, like
unbelievably
just 100% cutscenes. You know,
yeah,
and like what the fuck is going on? And
there's like
try
an
that
ocelot
one.
And a fucking mech and something about nuclear war. It's like what the fuck? Am
well, I
watching?
Mean, those games are deep, and unfortunately, you know, he goes 150,000% into that, you know. He's like, if I'm going to do a crazy thing about, you know, the military-industrial complex in my video game, I'm going to fucking do the military-industrial complex, all right? Now, I was just saying, I think one of my favorite parts about Braid was from the very beginning. Like, the game starts out, like, as a game. Like, there's not even an intro movie. There's the title screen is the game.
That's good. Yeah, it's well done.
And, you know, you're immediately given control. You know, there is no, like, wait, which is brilliant. Like, you think about most old games, there's always, like, a title screen. You have to press start, and you have to choose an option, and, like, okay, I'm going to do mission mode, and then you have to wait for it to load. Like, it loads to the game.
Yeah, you just walk to the right, and then you see the title screen.
Yeah.
And then you walk to the right, and then you see the level select. Broom.
Yeah, it's cinematic as hell, and the music, which I just want to mention for a second, is great. And it's even more interesting that none of that music was written for the game. He literally went on Magnatune and found awesome music that complemented his game, and it works great. I mean, maybe you could say something like the music is kind of instrumental and background enough to fit with lots of kinds of games, but regardless, most people don't do that unless you're like an indie developer like him who doesn't have a ton of money and can't license or hire a composer to write music. So he did something in the middle, and he made a great choice. Like, I listened to that soundtrack. I played some of that music at my wedding, for God's sake. Like, I love it that much.
Yeah. So you really like the beginning of the game. You kind of like the middle, Josh. That was Mike when I said you the first time. You kind of like the middle, the playing the game. And my favorite part about the game was the end and kind of the revelatory aspect and how it totally shifts your baseline, like, yet again, one final time.
I had so many oh shit moments. I loved the whole thing. I mean, the beginning, I loved too. My favorite part about the beginning was the first, like, I was sold by a screenshot. So I just avoided info and then bought it and played it on day one. And so I think the first time you die and you just see that blue X button when you fall into the fire and you press it, that was such a holy shit moment to me. When you press the X button, you're like, what is happening? And, you know, I just kept pressing it.
Soulja Boy moment.
I kept pressing it.
You Soulja Boyed.
Man. So, yeah, I had the Soulja Boy moment. I had the Chez end moment. I had the Mike, like, beginning opening screen moment. This is so beautiful. The orange sky.
Yeah. I remember talking to you on the phone about the ending. Like, I think I beat it. And
you didn't figure it out.
I didn't figure it out right away.
A lot of people didn't figure it out immediately.
And then Josh said, no, replay the fucking ending right now. Do it. And I did it.
Yeah,
and I got it, and I was like, holy shit!
It was like a day later, and I was like, wait, it doesn't sound like you got the ending.
Why aren't you?
And you're like, what do you mean? I played it. I'm like, yeah, but...
Did you play it?
Did you, like, what happened? Tell me what happened. Yeah. And you were like, well, this happened. Yeah, what else? What else? Well, I was like, go pick it up and play it again right now. And then, yeah, you played through the whole thing while we were on the phone. That was so much fun.
Oh, God. Yeah. That realization at the end is insane. Well, it's great that you can play through it.
And it's ambiguous enough.
Like, yeah, it's multiple levels of realization.
You don't necessarily catch it.
So the one thing that I want to say that is such a nitpicky thing that it doesn't even dock at any points, but I have to mention it, is the stars, which are sort of like the super crazy hardcore player collectible part that you can completely ignore and enjoy the game. And
I know exactly what you're going to say.
I, for the most part, did, yeah.
And I totally agree.
The fact that it's put in there, and the especially one particular star, which you know I'm going to talk about, that literally takes a long period of time, even if you know what to do, it takes a long period of time to even get it just based on the mechanics of the game, felt a little chintzy, for lack of a better word. Like, it kind of cheapened, like, because the rest of the game is so accessible.
Kind of a dick move.
Yeah, so accessible and easy to get in and solve, and that was more of like, seriously, I have to sit on this cloud for 3 hours?
I disagree. Those stars are so good. First of all, the fact that you can go through the whole game and not even know that they exist, that's awesome. So that then, as much as you might love the game, a week later you find out on the internet or from a friend that there's some even harder puzzles to go figure out if you
totally
want.
You just said found on the internet, which I think defeats some of the purpose of them existing.
You have said you've made exactly the opposite.
You even said you give up on a game if you have to go to the internet.
Similar, but it's not exactly the same. In Fez, it's like, here's a puzzle that I can't solve, and I don't have enough information in front of me, and I need to go get help. In this case, what I'm referencing is the fact that something exists. It's like something that you missed that you get to learn about. That exists. Not,
you have said that you like to have a puzzle that you can look at the screen, evaluate everything you know about the game.
Yes, and each of the star puzzles, if you go...
For 3 hours?
Each of those star puzzles...
Is it realistic that anybody
would
have
Okay, let's talk about that one specifically.
Because that's the one we care about.
Let's talk about that one specifically, right? you go in there and you look for the star, and the puzzle is like, I see it, how do I get there? And the puzzle is when you, you know, look somewhere else, you have to figure out that, oh, that would get me there. And that's the whole puzzle. That's the whole puzzle. The execution is not that hard. Jesus Christ. How hard is it to like to stand on something and then go make dinner and leave it running?
Right. It's no, not hard. That's but not you hard. Would never know that it was going to be that was an option.
It is. You could figure that out, because when you're effing around, we're going to spoil this one puzzle completely.
Whatever. Okay? It's been out. Spoil
when you're
it.
When you're effing around on the right side of that zone, with the puzzle pieces, you might notice that that thing moved an inch. And if you are that observant, like, hey, that cloud moved, mm-hmm. like, that's the puzzle. You have to be observant enough to see that the cloud moved, and then realize that cloud would continue to move, and then realize, oh, yeah, there's a star all the way at the beginning of the level. All I need to do is stand on that, and it'll move all the way to the left. And then execution is wait 2 hours. It's not, like, the most...
Set it and forget it.
It is, yeah. You set it down and right. you go eat dinner or read a book.
And that's fine.
Come on.
But I think that much like in Fez, which, whatever, we're spoiling things, the clock puzzle, which, you know, there's like several cubes on that screen yeah. and they all pop up at different times, you could just wait for the time to literally go past in the game so that the cube shows up. But nobody does that. Everybody fucks with their system
that's
settings
realistic.
And change it.
No, that's realistic. You could do that. You look at the angle of the hands, you calculate, you know, what time it'll be perfect, and then you just remember, you set an alarm on your watch or your phone, like, I need to go boot the game up at 8:30 p.m.
Yeah, I don't think anybody did that.
That's how, I think that's the legitimate way, and that's how a lot of people did it.
Do you think like, that, Charles? I didn't do it that way.
Setting an alarm to real time, like, oh, at 8:30 p.m., I need to go, like, play the game and get that cube. That's totally realistic. That's what you do that in like real life in MMOs or you know, you schedule events. We scheduled this podcast to occur at 7 p.m. on Tuesday. That's not unrealistic or unheard of. How is that like completely
I don't think
a
either
cheap
of us
move?
Are saying that it's unrealistic or unheard of. I don't think either of us are saying
I'm just saying
and neither
that
of us are taking issue with the
It sounds the, like you're taking the issue with the time.
Length of time
the,
aspect.
The length
no.
of time.
No, the issue is more with it's like the pace of change for the movement of that cloud is so small. You have to be like so crazy over the top observant that I wonder how many people solved it that way by actually noticing. Right? Do we think it was five people?
So I'm not saying that was my favorite puzzle in the game.
Yeah, I think that's what we're agreeing, that it was not the best puzzle.
It was not the best, by far. But I'm defending it as, you know, having its place for an individual one.
I don't
think it was total bullshit and worth, like, haranguing, you know.
Well, no, and that's why I said, that's Mike, why I said it was yeah, a nitpicky.
But the other stars, let's points. Talk about the other stars. Some of them were phenomenal and really, really difficult. And I got several of them completely legitimately. The only
really?
The only thing I needed to look up or find out, or whatever, because I didn't want to waste an absurd amount of time, was I wanted to find out exactly which levels had the stars. And that was a similar thing to Fizz, and I did kind of have an issue with that. Like, tell me which rooms to go in,
yeah.
to where there is a puzzle to solve. But once you're in that room, like, 100% of the solving it was doable. And so the one with the cannon mm-hmm. in the middle, where, you know, the key... appears on a different level than you is if you move to the left like one pixel.
Right.
What you had to do is where that cannon is in the middle, you had to get up onto an invisible platform above the top of the screen.
Right.
So you had to bounce off the guy falling out of the cannon. Now, besides just getting up there, once you got up there, you realized I need to get the key up here with me, which is puzzle number two, super effing difficult. Once you get the key up there with you, you realize, oh shit, I not only need to get me and the key up here, I need to get a dude up here so that I can bounce off him. And so you have to get a dude, a key, and yourself all up there at the same time, which seems completely impossible. And yeah, that was awesome. Super hard. I spent probably an hour on that or more, maybe 2 hours, but I got that one legitimately. I didn't get every star, but that one was the hardest accomplishment that I'm proud of in that game.
Nice. Good on you. I don't find that kind of puzzle solving interesting in the slightest. Like, the regular Fez puzzles, just not even the star puzzles. Not, and actually, that's totally wrong. That is an over-the-top statement. I do find it interesting in the slightest. I do find that stuff interesting, and but I never find it interesting enough to just sit there and do for that long. Like I never had the interest to want to go like actually try my hand at one of the star puzzles.
So I'm like, a couple of the others are too much. Are more doable. That one requires, even once you figure out what you have to do,
yeah,
and then even once you mentally figure out how to do that, then it takes an absurd amount of physical execution.
Mm-hmm.
That's very, very difficult. That's why that one took so long. It was multiple layers of brain puzzle and then a physical puzzle, which was very difficult. But some of the others are mostly brain puzzle, and they're just very, very hard brain puzzle, and you'd actually appreciate, and you could do them.
I think that I could, but I never have the desire.
Yeah, I think the criticism someone could make about those star puzzles is that if you take away the star puzzles, every puzzle in the regular game is doable without crazy platforming, acrobatic, plus thinking like that.
And most of them. There's a couple that totally require acrobatics, but just not absurdly hard.
Yeah.
Even in the very first level, you have to time that jump off that guy's head.
Yeah, but it wouldn't take you an hour to figure out how to jump off that guy's head. You know, it wouldn't take intense brain power and execution. Like, that's the thing, is that I think it was such a leap in difficulty that, most people probably didn't even know they were there if they didn't go on the internet, which is fine. You know, it's something for super hardcore fans who really want an extra challenge. That's fine. I'm okay with that. But because the leap in difficulty was so large, like myself, I think most people just gave up and never tried to do any of them, or especially didn't try to do something like that just because they're like, fuck this. Like,
yeah,
that's not worth it.
There's a couple extra things there purely for super fans.
Yeah.
And in Fez, you know, I was like, fuck that. I'm not a super fan. I like this game a lot, but I'm not going to do these super fan things. In Braid, I did almost all the super fan stuff. I did every time trial.
That's totally the phrase for it now.
To super gold, fan.
Goals.
Except the full game run. All the individual time trials, I got like the high rating on or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the one where you have to run the full game in under like 25 minutes or something.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, shit. That's I got so close. After two or three runs, I got to like 30 minutes. But 25 minutes is just an absurd amount of extra time.
Well, did you know chop off the most efficient algorithm for every level and you just couldn't execute it, or you didn't even know?
Well, it's both. And that one was complete bullshit because it's like the whole game to execute in one run.
Right. What's the speedrun time?
It's 25 minutes. Oh, the fastest person?
Yeah.
Like 11 minutes or something stupid.
They ran the whole game in 11 minutes?
I think it was something crazy low.
Yeah.
What? Because each level, yes, the individual speed runs are brilliant because they make you solve the puzzle a faster way. And, you know, when you first run it the way you solved it originally, right, it might, right, you know, your time might be 90 seconds executed very well. And then you have to learn how to solve it better. And then you go, okay, now when I execute this perfectly, I do it in 58 seconds. But my goal time is 55, so I just need to do the same thing but execute it better. And then you get barely under 55 and you're like, yes. Then you look at the leaderboards and you go, holy shit, there's a whole group of people that beat it in 40 seconds.
Yeah.
They must have figured out something I didn't. And then you go, holy shit, there's two guys that figured it out in 30 seconds. And it legitimately is like these extra puzzles on top that you could get one extra step of logic.
That stuff
is
all excellent. I love that that's in there.
Man, Braid needs, what's the game that had the, like Dust Force, where you can actually watch someone run the level?
That would probably
be useful.
But these are puzzles, not just physical execution.
Yeah, that's the
thing. So they don't have that there on purpose.
On purpose, yeah.
Right.
Trials has those too.
But it would be cool of something to unlock at the end, like optional. If you wanted to see people run it,
I think in this particular game, I think it's good that it's like an owner's secret. It's like strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You know.
So John Blow has another game coming out.
So
the
excited!
Witness. Oh god, Witness. Mist. Yeah, so it's excited. Gonna be.
It really does have a total Mist vibe.
Yeah.
It's like the island, the mysterious island, the crazy.
I'm curious to see if you like. Well, if any of us like. Because I think we're all excited, but I'm not sure any of us are super fans of Myst itself and that type of game.
I was a super fan of Myst, yeah.
Still? Even today?
I don't know like what that means. What
would
does that
you
mean?
Replay through Myst and enjoy it?
No.
Did you do this speedrun?
Well, that's my point, is that if he's making a game like Myst, would you...
Well, I don't think it holds up as well, but yes.
Right. I'm just curious. I'm excited, but I have reservations if it's going to be that Myst-like. I don't know.
I'm interested in what it's going to be, because I think he's an interesting enough cat that it's going to be a very different game.
Yeah. That's I mean, Braid's brilliant, so it's got to be at least
I'm hoping for something that's totally brilliant and not another Braid.
I'm prepared to go apeshit.
Okay.
Yeah. I hope all his puzzles sound perfectly crafted, similar to Braid in the sense that, like, he teaches you in baby steps, and you have to piece together stuff about your surroundings and the previous puzzles you've done, etc.
Xbox?
He hasn't announced the platform still, I don't think.
It's going to be Mac OS
You know,
9.
It might not be until the next-gen consoles, or it might be iPad, or it might be PC. I mean, his test build has been PC so far.
Right.
He's been sitting people down in front of a PC build.
And just, like, walking away for 2 hours.
Which is brilliant. I love that.
It's pretty tight. And he also had it at PAX.
That was so awesome. He set up a table.
It was like a secret, though, right?
He set up a table. It wasn't a secret, but not a big fanfare, right?
It was just there.
Right, yeah.
He set up a computer on a table. And just like at the start screen, it's somewhere with no label or anything and no
just
people.
Just in somebody
at the
else's booth, basically.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Like next, right next to some booth. Other weird booth. Yeah. And so, you know, a couple people got the opportunity to say, what is this? Sit down in front of it and try it pretty much uninterrupted with headphones or something. And yeah, that was so brilliant.
Yeah, it's cool.
All right,
so
that was that. That was our extra short episode.
wait, the mini episode.
Wait. So Braid, we're all giving it the thumbs up.
Definitely,
it's in the hall.
Yeah,
hell yeah.
BGE. All right, sweet.
Best game ever.
All right, so our short show of an hour, 40 minutes, 50 minutes.
Yeah,
we almost did two.
Minisode.
Normal. Yeah. Oh man,
we're gonna have to do like a microsode.
I'd hate to see our macrosode.
Oh Jesus.
Yeah. All right, thanks for joining us. You know, check
us out. Visit theescortmission.com.
Yeah, on our site, theescortmission.com, and all our other social bullshit, if you feel like it.
Review us on iTunes.
Review us on iTunes, please.
Click on our Amazon link.
Click on Amazon link to, you know, give us money without giving us money directly.
Yes, it doesn't cost you anything extra to buy stuff on Amazon.
Yes, and we are consumer whores, so. Thanks.
Fuck Giant Bomb.